It's early morning in Venezuela, where uncertainty still reigns after America's capture of former leader Nicolas Maduro yesterday. Donald Trump says he is to run the South American country and has intimated he may soon turn his attention to neighbouring Colombia. In a moment, we'll hear the latest from Venezuela and New York. But first, after the dramatic events of the past 24 hours and 13 years of divisive Maduro rule, how are Venezuelans in Ireland reflecting this afternoon? Our reporter Etna Dodd spoke to Liliana Fernandez and Betsy Nina, who have been both living here for several years, and she began by asking how they felt about the events overnight in Venezuela.
I generally was very worried about whether people had been killed, whether people had lost their homes and become refugees. At the same time, I knew that the general sentiment was probably people being scared, but at the same time, they've been waiting for this for a good while, especially since the United States started threatening in the ocean.
I also woke up to the news, and my family group chat already was talking about it. And I feel a bit like worried. My first thought was, okay, I'm going to find a way to send money right now. So you go and buy food because you don't know what can happen. It's very confusing as well because we are happy that that happened, or I'm happy that this happened. And every Venezuelan person that I talk to is happy. We want him out because we tried, our own people tried to do it so many times. So many people died. There's a lot of people that fought for that, and they are not with us here, and others had to leave the country.
We've been waiting for this regime to leave for 26 years. I was 9 years old when I started protesting, even though my family were Chavistas. We have tried literally everything. I mean, we are 8 million abroad for a reason, and the only reason our families are surviving is because we send remittances. On the one hand, I think people forget the sentiment on the ground, so what people wanted, and I think that's the perspective that is missing in the analysis. Most people think of the regime, Maduro, and Trump, and that this is like a battle between the two. But people forget that there is an opposition in Venezuela, opposition that is kind of, it allowed this to happen.
President Trump, though, has said that the US will run the country for an indefinite period. He hasn't said that the opposition will run the country. Are you worried about that?
Yes, I'm not going to lie. I'm worried about the uncertainty and the lack of clarity on his declarations. We were so desperate for a change. We questioned the process, but at the same time, we know that something had to happen. Now, the question is, what's actually going to happen? How is going to be the transition? What does he mean about ruling the state and for how long? What we are most worried is about the local people. What's going to happen to them?
What are your hopes for the local people, for your family and friends back in Venezuela?
I mean, it cannot get worse for them. Like, basically, they've been in misery. They've been lacking for access to services for so many years, not being able to buy food for years. There is a whole period of, we don't know. People are in shock, to be honest, at the moment.
What do you think is going to happen with your family in the next few days? What do you hope for them?
Well, I hope for clarity with them. I hope that they stay calm. I think they are very positive about the whole situation. It was rock bottom already. Things like a minimal wage in a month is like $3, which buys you nothing in the supermarket. When I was living there, early, I was already an adult. I went protesting. I saw people being killed. I saw people, when I was here, looking for food on the bins, people well-dressed, like medium class. I think the most important part is listening to Venezuelan people when this matter comes, because you don't really know if you haven't lived it. We lived through all this mess. It's been too long, too complicated to just say, they just want your oil.
Etna Dodd reporting there. Now, Catherine Ellis is a journalist who has lived and worked in Venezuela. And Catherine, you heard from Venezuelans in Ireland there. And does that tally with what people in Venezuela itself are telling you this afternoon?
I mean, it certainly does. I mean, the last person there was just talking about Venezuelans actually want to be listened to. You know, this isn't a black and white situation. And a lot of Venezuelans are very worried, but they have been waiting for this moment for a very, very long time. So there is some jubilation, but a lot of them, what they're telling me is that, you know, they always expected to be celebrating this moment, be out on the streets, to be celebrating with friends and family. But it's almost like they don't know what to do. They're in shock. They're in disbelief. It's happened. They're happy. But now the huge question remains of what next? What will happen next? Now, there is a lot of concern at the minute about what Trump has said, because he seems to have cast aside Maria Corina Machado, which is the opposition leader. Many people are hoping that Edmundo Gonzalez and Maria Corina will be taking power eventually, because they were the people that were voted for. But that hasn't happened yet. So people are hoping that that happens in the long term, but Trump's signals are that that will not be happening anytime soon. So there is some concern over that.
Yeah, so who exactly is in charge then, Catherine? Because President Trump says former Vice President Delcy Rodriguez is the new leader, but she says Nicolas Maduro is the country's true president. So where exactly does that leave Venezuela?
Yeah, well, what actually happens when there's a period of absence of the president in Venezuela, the vice president takes charge. Now, that's officially in the constitution. That's after about 30 days. But at the minute, she kind of is acting leader since he isn't there. But the problem is, this doesn't sit well with the majority of the Venezuelan people. She is seen as one of the very key figures in Chavismo, in the Venezuelan regime, and she is extremely close to Nicolas Maduro, as is her brother Jorge Rodriguez, and they have been in this regime for a very, very long time. And what people were hoping is that it wasn't just Maduro that would leave, that it was a few of these key figures, about six of them. And if they don't go, I don't think many Venezuelans are going to be happy.
And now, are obviously, they all still this is just there, Catherine. Mm-hmm. Are all those key figures still there?
Yes, as far as we know, they are all still there. The question is, what happens next? Now, a lot of people are quite realistic about the situation. They know things, you know, they can't happen overnight, although they did with Maduro. You know, it's not necessarily possible to get all six or 10 or a dozen people, the key figures, out. So they're realistic about that. Change isn't kind of imminent. It's not straight away. But as time goes on, if there isn't a transition to the people that they voted for, then I think a lot of Venezuelans are going to be very disappointed and very unhappy.
And we see today as well reports of news outlets being shut down, including three television stations. But what's known as well at this stage about the American airstrikes yesterday? What damage was caused, and any word or otherwise on potential fatalities?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of unverified reports at the minute. There are reports that around 40 people have been killed and many more injured, but these are all unverified at the minute. There are a lot of images and videos actually floating around that show burnt out buildings. Now, I actually was speaking last night to somebody who actually saw this all play out from his house. At first, he thought it was an actual earthquake. He heard loud crashes, the windows were shaking. Then he saw these huge helicopters. Now, he's very near to a military barracks, so he's used to seeing helicopters, but these were bigger than he's ever seen. And then he saw explosions and fire. So they knew that there were probably casualties. They didn't know how many. So those details are still coming out. So people are sad about that. They're concerned. So they're very mixed feelings between the cost that this is having on the Venezuelan population, but this was expected. But what will happen next? What is the cost of freedom? Because people do want this freedom.
So uncertainty still reigning in Venezuela. Catherine Ellis, thank you very much for that this afternoon. Well, to the US now, where Nicolas Maduro has spent his first night in a New York jail, and criticism as well of Donald Trump's actions in Venezuela, including from within his own party. The United Nations Security Council, it's to hold an emergency meeting tomorrow. Our global security reporter Yvonne Murray is in New York. And Yvonne, what's known at this stage about the whereabouts of former President Maduro and indeed his wife?
Well, former President Maduro arrived by plane to New York State yesterday and then was transferred by helicopter to the Metropolitan Detention Center in Brooklyn in New York City. And he's currently being held there on drugs charges brought by the US authorities. He was seen last night in footage circulating online, walking down the corridor flanked by drug enforcement agency officials, greeting people, wishing them Happy New Year. It's also circulating on social media. We've seen crowds gathering outside the detention facility overnight, some in support of the operation, some wrapped in the Venezuelan flag, celebrating this moment, others striking a much more cautious note, worrying that this is a moment of great instability and lacking plans for what happens next. Tomorrow, though, Barry, the former president of Venezuela is expected to appear in a Manhattan court to face some of those charges. And these are serious charges: conspiracy to commit narco-terrorism, conspiracy to import cocaine, a list as long as your arm, really. Mm-hmm. Things that are going to carry, potentially carry many years, if not decades, in jail.
And we would assume that is the start of the legal process or the start of the court's process.
Indeed it is. And this kind of case, because the evidence gathering will go on for a very long time, it could take months or even years. The question is whether the former president of Venezuela decides to enter a plea bargain, in which case he might come to some sort of arrangement with the US authorities. But a very mixed picture here, reflecting what we heard there from the streets of Venezuela, but also from the people that my colleague spoke to there in Dublin. People really shocked, first of all, very cautious about what happens next, because while there is this celebration that the Maduro regime has come to an end, there are real questions over how much stomach the US has to really put in place a democratic transition in Venezuela.
Especially given past examples as well. But what has been the political reaction at Congress, including within the Republican Party itself?
And this is where it gets very interesting, because the Republican Party has largely come out in support of the US administration for this operation. You know, calling it finally an end to a brutal dictatorship. But once again, we're seeing the split inside the Republican Party that we've seen before, especially on foreign policy issues, with former Congressperson Marjorie Taylor Greene really leading this charge against the US getting involved in another, what they call, forever war. On the Democratic side of the House, of course, we could expect perhaps much more vocal opposition, pointing out that this is a clear violation of international law. And the division along the party lines, I think, is something that will get entrenched.
And Yvonne, this big UN Security Council meeting tomorrow, Donald Trump has also put Colombia and its president, Gustavo Petro, on notice. So how big are the stakes tomorrow at this meeting? Can anything happen?
Well, the stakes are huge. I mean, we're talking about the overthrow of another regime, another state, and tomorrow at the Security Council, this is a meeting, an emergency meeting that has been called by Colombia with the backing of Russia and China, key Venezuelan allies. What we can expect, though, because, of course, the US is a veto-holding permanent member of the Security Council, they will push back against any condemnation which we can expect to hear from other members of the Council. They are likely to call for other countries to back them in bringing about a democratic regime in Venezuela. They're unlikely to get that from many quarters, but I think what's going to be interesting is to watch the reaction of France and the UK, who are also veto-wielding members, who were muted in their opposition yesterday but are becoming stronger today when you hear their rhetoric, pointing out the violation of international law that this was. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they position themselves when the US takes the floor in the Security Council tomorrow.
So all eyes on that meeting tomorrow. Yvonne Murray, our global security reporter in New York, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. Welcome back. We're going to return to our top story now and go to Caracas in Venezuela, where I'm joined by freelance journalist Gabriela Mesones Roja. Gabriela, I appreciate communications are difficult in Caracas right now, so very much appreciative for you joining us. But you were in Caracas when the bombs fell yesterday morning. What did you see and what did you hear?
Hi, Barry. Thank you so much for having me. So yesterday at 2 a.m. in the morning, people started waking up to explosions across Caracas and other states like La Guaira and Aragua. And the explosions lasted for about 1 hour, 1 hour and a half. It was definitely filled with uncertainty because the Venezuelan government spent all this time without any official communication. So all this time, all people had to understand what was really happening with social media. At first, people didn't really know what was happening, if it was an international attack, if it was a coup, for example. But eventually, when videos and images started to go out, we could notice that the planes and the helicopters weren't Venezuelan. So from there, it was very easy to start to reconstruct a little bit what was happening. Of course, the big news came about 6 a.m. when we found out that Maduro and his wife, Celia, had been taken. So from that moment, of course, it was the big highlight of what's going to happen now and what's this going to look like today.
Yeah, what's the mood there today then?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
What's the mood today, Gabriela?
So today everything is very calm. Yesterday, everyone was very stressed yesterday. People were going to the supermarket to buy some food, to buy some medicine, also going to the gas station. Most of the stores were closed. So there were huge lines and people were waiting. Today, the feeling I get is that everyone got it over and done with yesterday with buying food and buying things to take care of themselves. So today, everything just seems a little bit calm. And I think everyone is a little bit like hiding out, hoping to see what the next 48 hours are going to look like in Venezuela. You see there are some issues with urban paramilitaries. So people, I think, are trying to avoid encounters of this type.
Okay, so people trying to avoid any encounters, as you say, Gabriela. Long queues at supermarkets yesterday, but not so much today. More of a sense of calm. Gabriela Mesones Roja, thank you very much for joining us from Caracas this afternoon. I really appreciate that. I'm joined now in studio by Ed Burke, Assistant Professor in the History of War at UCD. Thanks very much for coming in. Your reaction to events of the past 24 hours?
Yeah, in some way this was predictable. Trump had been advertising that he was, you know, was going after Venezuela's president, and there had been a huge amount of dialogue and negotiation, including directly with the president of Venezuela himself, and therefore when this happened, when Maduro was. When this rendition, if you wish, happened, it wasn't entirely surprising. I think what was more shocking was the announcement that the US will run Venezuela. I mean, that was something I had thought that, you know, that Trump would take this win and then apply pressure on the interim president, Rodriguez. But instead, he's now said that, no, this is going to be a complete takeover, albeit, you know, for a finite period.
We're taking over the oil stations and so on. Is there any precedent to a takeover like that?
I think there's not. I mean, the situation with Panama has been cited with the operation to remove President Noriega at the end of 1989. But there had been military action. The Panamanian military had actually attacked the U.S. military near the Canal Zone at that time, and they had killed a U.S. Marine lieutenant, which gave the U.S. really. This was a different administration. This was the first. This was with George H.W. Bush administration. A U.S. military personnel had been attacked. There had been a fatality, and they used that very much then as a reason to intervene. And obviously, they had carefully briefed allies and the United Nations beforehand. None of this has happened. In fact, there is this series of reasons given for this intervention are confusing, to say the least. One is about seizing the oil, the other is about Venezuelan democracy, the other is about narcotics. That doesn't seem credible, given that the Venezuelan government are not a serious narcotic actor compared to, let's say, the amount of trafficking of narcotics from Mexico, which is the vast majority of narcotics coming into the United States. And then other reasons. I mean, a lot of this does perhaps come back to the failed coup in 2019 and 2020 again. And these interventions, which were US-backed, that really, I think, Trump felt were humiliating for him, for his administration. And therefore he you know, particularly 2019, sorry, I should say. So he was quite frustrated about that, and he seemed to have this personal animus towards Venezuela's president. And now he's given this litany of really sort of incoherent reasons as to why he's intervened and what comes next.
Yeah, going back, I think, to the 1800s and some of his references as well yesterday. But what could happen in Venezuela now? Because Trump says America has taken it over. The interim president, Rodriguez, is a Maduro supporter, yet Trump says he has her on side. And at the same time, Venezuela does have a very well-equipped military, doesn't it not? So might things escalate on the ground yet?
Oh, certainly. And the Cuban military and the Cuban intelligence, you know, they have a presence of 40,000 personnel on the ground there. Cuban intelligence has worked very hard with the Venezuelan military counterintelligence organization to make sure that the military is, to try and ensure that the military is coup-proof. So what they've done is then they've set up, you know, different separate commands. They've delegated a lot of regional military command. They've set up paramilitary organizations. They've got national militia. This makes it very difficult then to get the Venezuelan military on side. And so far, there's not, you know, really an indication that Vladimir Padrino López, who is the Minister for Defense, that he is on side, that he has had any dialogue with the United States, and he's viewed as a hardliner, together with the Interior Minister Cabello, who's seen as quite hard-lying as well. So the idea that you can simply have these conversations with Interim President Rodriguez, and then she's, you know, we've no reason to believe this, you know, on side, doesn't mean that you don't face a challenge, that there is, there'll be hardcore resistance. The Venezuelan military has taken over much of the economy, and there's been a huge amount of work by Cuba to make sure that a coup is not, that that makes sure again that the Venezuelan military is, if not coup-proof, certainly resistant to type of coups that the country experienced.
And are we any way clear as to the legality or otherwise of Donald Trump's actions in Venezuela, and could he face any reprimand at all from the UN tomorrow?
Well, obviously, the United States has a veto at the UN Security Council, so it's unlikely the Security Council can really do anything, you know, to get over that. But however, I mean, it's clear that the United States, I mean, there does not seem to be any international legal grounds under for intervention here, nor that have they really sort of tried to pretend that there is. You know, they have not made any arguments such as we saw in 2002, for example, leading up to the invasion of Iraq, although I think most international legal scholars would view that as absolutely illegal. But nonetheless, there was no, they just don't seem to care.
Well, they're painting Maduro as an imminent threat to the US, and that was the reason for their actions, wasn't it?
Yes, but they've made their case with regards to narco-trafficking and people trafficking. But again, the statistics are clear, including from the US Department of Justice recently, that Venezuela is not the primary threat there to the United States. Again, the bulk of this comes from Mexico. And
what about Europe? We saw the tweet yesterday from Ursula von der Leyen, following very closely the situation in Venezuela. We stand by the people and support a peaceful and democratic transition. What's your assessment of that statement?
Well, I think this is very damaging for NATO in terms of NATO trying to, when NATO looks to Ukraine and tries to say that it is against this illegal invasion, and now they have their preeminent member state is sort of, you know, basically not, is behaved in such an illegal way. It is very difficult for Europeans. And obviously we've seen, you know, condemnation from the French foreign minister yesterday. We've seen Prime Minister Sanchez in Spain has now strongly condemned this illegal action in Venezuela. So it fractures Europe, and it makes, frankly, it puts countries like the UK and indeed Ireland, who are very close to the United States, in a really awkward situation.
Can we say anything?
Well, we saw yesterday Helen McKenzie came out with a statement where she didn't name the United States. She didn't actually name the country at all. She just said that we stand by the UN Charter, and we ask for a peaceful resolution and transition, and we condemn, of course, the former president for his stealing of the election. Previously, but again, she didn't name the United States, and it was a far cry from what, say, the statements from Spain or indeed France. So we see a divided Europe and also a divided European Union and a divided NATO as well.
$1 million question at times, but what might President Trump do next? Might he target other countries? He's already referenced Colombia. You've referenced the drugs there in Mexico, Cuba, Greenland. What might be his next move?
I mean, his problem here is Congress, because their Congress is clearly divided over this. And he does, he's trying to say that he didn't need to notify Congress. I think most legal scholars in the United States would completely disagree with that. So Congress will come to look at this. There's enough in the Republican Party who are very concerned about foreign adventurism on the part of the White House. And he may not have actually the votes to pursue these type of policies. But also simply just removing, you know, a lot of people have said for a long time that the power in Venezuela was in the military. The military are intact. The militias, the paramilitaries are still intact. And so simply these it's a bit like his military attack on Iran, or his he lacks the attention, and his administration does not have the strategic capacity to follow things through. So ultimately I think that there'll be pushback in Congress and he'll move on. And this will come to be far from being a sort of this large-scale occupation which require hundreds of thousands of US troops. Okay. This is just going to be more bluster and words, and then a sort of he's going to move on to other things.
Ed Burke, Assistant Professor in the History of War at UCD, thank you very much for joining us on This Week, This Afternoon.